Good morning and welcome to Perspectives. Today we're talking about the growing rate of STDs, or sexually transmitted diseases, in Leon County and what officials are doing to reduce those numbers through prevention and education. The month of April is STD Awareness Month. The rate of sexually transmitted diseases is raising alarms in Leon County, where the number of syphilis cases jumped by 134% from 2017 to 2018. In response, officials launched the Leon County Syphilis Prevention Coalition this month. Joining us in the studio are Claudia Blackburn, the health officer for the Department of Health in Leon County, James Easton, the HIV/AIDS program coordinator, Dale Harrison, the STD program manager, Jane Johnson with the Tallahassee-Leon County Commission on the Status of Women and Girls, and Alan Cox, the assistant superintendent of schools in Leon County. Remember, you can join our conversation by giving us a call at 414-1234 or 1-800-926-8809 if you're outside the Tallahassee area. You can also give us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org. And so, as I said, this is STD Awareness Month. We've also just launched the Syphilis Prevention Coalition. I want to know a little bit more about what that coalition is and what we're doing with that.
So the Syphilis Prevention Coalition was launched a few weeks ago, and it is part of our department's plan to do multiple things. First of all, we noticed that there was an increase in syphilis towards the end of last year, and we had two cases of syphilis that it's called congenital syphilis, but in babies, and that is just absolutely a terrible thing. It can cause the baby to die, it can cause birth defects, and it's because it has spread to reproductive age women. When we looked at our numbers and saw the spike, we knew we had to do something. So one of the things we're really trying to do is educate the public, especially those people that are at highest risk of getting syphilis and other STDs. And we know we need to do that through social media. This helps, but we absolutely have to use social media, which is something that we need help from our partners for. So that's one of the things that we've asked our partners to do, is help get the word out about these STDs, how to prevent them, what to do if you think you have one, through social media.
Mm-hmm. And one of the groups you're partnering with is Jane Johnson's group, the Tallahassee-Leon County Status on Women and Girls. Tell us a little bit about how you guys are partnering, or how you're involved in this issue of raising awareness about STD prevention.
Well, we almost, I have to say, we stumbled upon this issue in the course of doing research on health outcomes for women and girls in Leon County. And we were looking across indicators on the Florida Department of Health's website. There's a section where you can look at all kinds of vital statistics. And we saw that Leon County leads the state in the number of bacterial STDs. And not only do we have the highest rate of any county in the state, we have more than double the rate of the average. So we were just astonished and baffled by how a county like Leon could be out there in such a bad way. So we did some informal polling of college students, thinking that that was maybe the cohort of the population that was most affected. And what we heard back from some of the young female students that we interviewed was that they think that students are just ignorant or unaware of how STDs are contracted and spread. These were girls from good families who were highly educated, but in this particular area, they were not educated, and they really had, there was a lot of urban legend surrounding how things are spread, how things are contracted, and who's susceptible, and it was kind of a lot of that, well, it couldn't happen to me because I'm not that kind of a person. So we saw that it was, we definitely needed to do a public education campaign, and we also wanted to talk to the schools to find out, well, how are kids learning about STDs and sexual health and reproductive health in schools? So we contacted Leon County school systems and also the Department of Health, and brought the experts to one of our health meetings to ask them questions. And what we found out was just astonishing. So that's why I'm so glad to have Leon County Schools' Alan Cox and then Claudia and her counterparts at the Department of Health here on this panel, because they are really the subject matter experts. We want to partner to help raise awareness and make sure that parents and adults know that they need to educate our youth about sexual reproduction and sexual health and what the risks are, because clearly kids aren't getting that message, and they are being infected at astonishing rates.
Mm-hmm. Alan, talk to us a little bit. Jane just mentioned, you know, the importance of education and how that can play a role in prevention. Talk to us a little bit about sort of what kind of STD education students are getting now at Leon County Schools.
Okay, well, I'm very excited that we're making more awareness of this issue, and awareness does make a difference, and you'll hear an example of that with James and Dale in just a little bit. The big focus for the last couple of years has been obesity, right? But I've been shouting from the mountaintops, y'all need to look at this data. Y'all being whoever group I can get in front of. The Center for Disease Control, they look at ages 15 to 19 for this particular age group. And that category, we're the highest in the state in some of these STD areas. And so I'm glad that we're Claudia and her leadership and her group is now bringing this more, and with Jane, into the forefront. Now, let's talk about our school system, okay? Thanks to standardized testing, and I'm going to put it where it is, that came really heavy in the late 90s, and the emphasis that we put on it with reading and writing and math and sometimes science, and the mandatory remediation classes for those, all these laws that came down from our government, we lost certain other areas in education. One of them was health education. So we don't have mandated health classes, believe it or not. Now, I got 12 state statutes that relate to health education, but how am I going to deliver that instruction? That's always been the big thing. So in our county, we've gone to science teachers. So our human growth and development, aka sex education, is through our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade science teachers, which, by the way, have their own curriculum to do, with end-of-the-course exams that do not ask sex ed questions. And then in high school, we've gone to something called Health Opportunities and Physical Education, which is a 9th grade PE class, and to biology, which is 9th and 10th grade. And that's where we deliver this instruction. And we have evidence-based curriculum. Some people call it a CAN program, but it's a very highly recognized program that was recommended to me from the Department of Education, and I have a review committee. We do this education usually in May, after all the end-of-the-course exams and the big state testing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can go on and on and on, but that's what we do. We do the best we can with it. And by the way, contraceptive education, human growth and development, sex education is not new. It's been around for – my mother was a health teacher in the 60s. I mean, so it's been around for quite a while. But we have seen an uptick of these areas, and so we hope to do more focus on it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I want to touch on with all of you is, so I opened the show by saying that we're seeing these, rising rates of STDs in Leon County. With syphilis specifically, I mentioned a 134% increase. And that's something that also reflects what we're seeing, I think, across the country. But really, I guess I'm getting down to when we're talking about statistics, when we say things like a 134% increase, that seems like a really shocking number. That seems like a big deal. How big a deal is it really? My understanding is that when we look at Leon County, when we look at women, maybe there are 30 more cases of syphilis between 2017 and 2018. So when I hear those numbers, 30 more cases compared to 134% increase, it paints a very different picture in my mind. James, you can help clear that up for me. How concerning really are these cases of syphilis?
Well, it's very concerning because if we're seeing, say, like you said, for instance, the 30%, if 30 people were diagnosed last year, which isn't the number, but if we're seeing double that rate, so 60%, that means that literally 200% of the infection rates have increased. And if we're seeing that over a one-year period, if you were to draw out the trend for a couple of years, so look at a five-year trend, that could be exponential, exponential increases in rates for infection. That's why now is the time to do the education, to increase the testing, to increase the level of partnerships that we have in our community to get ahead of it, to help reduce infections. So in 5 years, we're not seeing that 30 number being 200. basically.
And if I can, to clarify, when the Commission on the Status of Women and Girls was looking at these numbers, we were looking at rates, not numbers. So it was the rate per 100,000. So, you know, it takes into account that there are populations or there are parts of the state or counties that have a higher population, but our rate per 100,000 is higher. So even if our numbers are small, the fact that more of our people as a percentage of the total population are being diagnosed with STDs, that is alarming because we're an outlier in an area where we never want to be an outlier. And it, to me, it raises questions about sociological trends and who knows what. I mean, we'd love to get to the why of this issue, and we're not there yet. But we think by raising public awareness, we might be able to understand it better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to put this in perspective, if you look at the total number of cases of gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis in 2017, it was almost 4,500 cases. That's a fair amount, especially when you're talking about that being just pretty much in the reproductive age population. Now, syphilis is a rare disease, but when we have two cases in a year in babies, that's a sentinel event. That is something we need to get upset about, and we need to do something about it. We shouldn't be seeing that ever.
And, you know, I totally agree with Claudia saying, because, you know, when you looking at childbearing ages, you know, you want to make sure that females are getting tested. And even when you look at numbers overall, back in 2017, we had a total of 76 cases. And in 2018, we had 178 cases. So that's a big spike. And even when you look at the age group from 15 to 24, that's where we're seeing our biggest increase. So, you know, I believe in the talk, test, and treat. You know, talk about it, you know. And a lot of times, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about STDs because it's kind of pushed up on the, you know, the rug. But, you know, these are things that we need to talk about. And not only just talk about it, you know, our parents need to be very open, you know, with our children. We need to be able to go to our healthcare providers and be able to talk about STDs. And, you know, I hate to say the majority of our STDs do not have signs and symptoms.
More on that after the break. Thank you so much. Welcome back to Perspectives. Today we're talking about STD prevention and awareness here. And a reminder that any of you can join our conversation by giving us a call at 414-1234 or 1-800-926-8809 if you're outside the Tallahassee area. You can also send us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org. Dale, right before the break, you were talking to us about kind of the tenets of STD prevention and testing, and it's 3 points: talk, test, and treat. And you were talking about, you know, talking, the importance of talking openly with your healthcare provider and your partner about your sexual history and maybe your history of STDs. Treat is the next important step with that.
Yes, you know, like I was saying, you know, talk, test, and treat is very important because, you know, like I was saying, you need to be able to talk about STDs openly, especially to parents. And today, you know, you don't find many parents talking about STDs or even talking about taking their child to get screened for STDs. Testing is the only way that we can find out if we do have an STD. And, of course, if we do have an STD, you know, we can also treat. And, you know, most diseases, bacteria infection, can be treated with antibiotics, even the syphilis. So it's very important that we, you know, bring awareness, open up to our children, healthcare providers, and like I was saying before, all STDs don't have a sign or a symptom. A lot of STDs are asymptomatic, so you know it's very important, you know, to get tested. And I find out more females test more than males, so it's very important for our males to test and our females to get tested.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that sometimes it can be hard to talk about STDs. I mean, we live in a culture where just talking about sex is very taboo. And I think talking about an STD maybe feels a little even more taboo than that. How can we change that? How can we make it so that students maybe feel safer talking with, as you mentioned, their parents, their sexual partners, their doctors about STDs? Alan, is that something you guys talk about at school?
It is. A prevention education curriculum, whether it's bullying prevention or cyber or sexting or whatever it is, or substance abuse, it involves some of the same components. And they're usually role-playing. You put students in a position to where they actually role-play a real-life example. So when we do human growth and development, sex education kind of stuff, it's not a paper and pencil. It's out of your seat moving, active participation in regards to, all right, I'm in this situation that's not good. How do I get myself out of it? So that's some of the kind of stuff that we do. James and Dale here have a program, and I definitely want to make sure that the community hears about it. It's probably been our most successful thing, and I'm not going to steal their thunder on it. I do want to say that, back to the numbers, that the 15 to 19 category is a very high category in the areas of chlamydia, as an example. We live in a community that we have a huge influx of 19-year-olds every fall, right? We have two major universities and one of the largest community colleges in the state here. And so this group comes in. So people often point to me, well, your numbers are skewed because of the 19-year-olds. I said, it doesn't matter. They interact with their 16, 17, and 18-year-olds. So you still have to take that into consideration, even if it may drive up some of our numbers. But we have what we call an STD blitz it's in association with our actual classroom that our experience that our science teachers do. And Dale or James, why don't y'all tell about that? That's probably one of our best programs.
Yeah, James.
Sure. So we work closely with Leon County School Board to develop a curriculum for both middle and high school students for overall STD and HIV prevention and treatment information. So we created presentations and had them approved by the school board. And with the help of Alan, as well as other members of the Leon County School Board, we've been invited to give presentations to 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th grade students, so each middle and high school in Leon County, where we send staff, either our health educators, our nursing staff, or volunteers from our community programs, directly into the schools, where we're presenting and talking to students about STIs, making sure that they're aware of the STIs that are most prevalent in our community, how they are at risk, being young adults. And, you know, even though like Alan had said, even though a majority of the cases that we're seeing are in, you know, students and people 19 through 24, 25, the best way to prevent those infections is to make sure that the education is there, that students are hearing this information starting from an early age. That's why it's really great that eighth graders were included in this, because even if kids aren't being sexually active right now, having this education, getting this information presented to them, knowing that there's treatment, that there are prevention means, will likely help prevent infections as they go into college, as they become, you know, the next steps in their life where they might become sexually active.
Mm-hmm. And just to piggyback off what James said is, you know, what I like about the presentation, last year we had a chance to pull data, and we sat down and we saw the high morbidity of STDs, and we was able to go to those schools. So I think we did about 7 or 8 schools that had the highest morbidity. And what I like about this year, Mr. Cox allowed the Department of Health to actually go and do all the schools. And even in doing the presentation, I noticed that the schools, the kids are very into the presentations. They ask questions. And what I like about the presentation is a lot of kids didn't know that the statute, which is 384.29, protects them from their confidentiality. And they found out, you know, even in the presentation, if you're 14 years and older, you can walk into the health department, you can get screened without the parents knowing it. Once I was able to implement, or James and I was able to implement that into the program, we see more students actually coming to the health department to be tested. And even with the testing, you know, with the rapid syphilis, the rapid HIV test, which is the 20-minute test, it's great, because what it did, even in doing the presentation, it actually opened the avenue up to make students feel more safe and coming to the health department without, you know, their parents knowing about it. We talked about the test, talk, test, and treat. And you asked the question, you know, how can we, you know, get rid of that barrier? Well, sometimes parents are not going to talk to their kids. And by us going into the schools, letting them know that there's a statute out there that protects them from their confidentiality, you know, students are now coming to the health department and they want to be screened. Mm-hmm. Some are sexually active, some have not. And even if they do test positive, you know, we always draw blood to get a confirmatory test, and we talk about it. We do set partner notification, and we go out and locate partners. Also, I wanted to add on, you know, when we was talking about our numbers, you know, there are so many people out there that might have an STD that are named on cases and didn't even know it because, you know, the signs and symptoms wasn't there. But what I do like about it, I like the statute. I like the 14 years of age. And, you know, if anybody out there listening now, you know, if you're 14 years or old, you can come to the Leon County Health Department and you can be tested.
Right, and that would be confidential. Your parents wouldn't need to know.
Exactly.
or whatever your results are would be private and just information
very
for you. I liked what you mentioned, Dale, about, you know, sometimes parents feel uncomfortable addressing this subject with their children. And it was making me think about, you know, I said sort of like sex is taboo and maybe STDs feel even more taboo. And I was thinking about why that is. And I think there's an element of shame associated with having an STD. And for me, I grew up in the rural north, and so I had abstinence-only sex education. And I think that's largely the message that's given to women with abstinence-only sex education. Is that that having sex, or especially being caught having sex, so you would be caught by getting an STD or by getting pregnant, is the most shameful thing, and it makes you unworthy of love. And I think that maybe some parents now have internalized those feelings. I think, you know, I grew up in the age when abstinence-only sex education was common and widespread across the country. I think maybe those parents have internalized those feelings of shame and concern. And I wonder if that is what's creating some of that barrier for parents being able to talk with their children about STDs. And I wonder, Claudia, any thoughts on maybe how we can fight that that barrier of shame that parents have that's making it hard for them to communicate and educate with their children?
First of all, I have to say that is the most succinct, best description of sort of why this is happening and why parents aren't talking to their kids. So I thank you for that. You know, we haven't done this in this community, but in other communities that I've lived, we have had special programs that target that education for parents. We need to help parents figure out what to say, just like we're helping the children with role play. What can we do for parents? Because they should be the primary educators. I'm sure there's information on the internet. I'm not sure how good it is, but I think that's something that we can consider and maybe address in our community. If it's going on, please pipe in my colleagues here.
And actually, I wanted to piggyback on what you just said, because I completely agree with you, but I'm not sure that the shame that parents feel about talking about it is new. What's new is we have this sort of collision of social media and hypersexualization of children with the same discomfort that parents have always had about talking about sex, because it's been, I mean, that's a sort of a moray that has been around a long time. But also some of the other research that the Commission on the Status of Women and Girls has done is on the impact of social media on girls. And they're exposed to sex without any limitation at a level that is unprecedented. So they're feeling pressure to be sexual before they're ready to be sexual. They're not comfortable talking to their mom or dad about it. They're being pressured by either sexting or seeing things on the internet, being shamed on Facebook. If they do something sexual, they're being shamed on Facebook if they're not sexual. So there's all of this pressure around sexuality that girls and young boys are facing that is new, because we as parents didn't have social media, so we don't know how to teach about social media. So you combine that reluctance to talk about it with this external pressure of social media, and I think it produces a powder keg of ignorance with active engagement, and now we're seeing the result, which is why we really, really need to get that education out there, and also, but maybe harness the power of social media, which has created some of this problem because of all the online dating and hookup apps, but harness that power for good to use it as an awareness and education tool. And I know Claudia's folks have talked about requiring those social media apps or platforms to also provide sexual education and STD prevention education as part of their dating and matching and that sort of thing as a social responsibility element.
I think what Jane's talking about is we have found that a good percentage, at least 38%, probably higher, of our syphilis cases use dating apps, online dating apps, and that leads to anonymous sex, and then we cannot find the contacts, and so we can't stop the spread of disease, and it's very dangerous for people who do that, but they don't necessarily realize that, and there are no messages on those dating apps. They're privately owned. We are looking at how can we get some messaging out there on the dating app so that people will just understand the risk that they're taking.
Mm-hmm. I think another layer, Claudia, you were just mentioning a moment ago about parents, you know, it'd be great if they would talk to their kids, but where are they going to get the information to even talk to their kids? Sure, there's some stuff on the internet, but there's also a lot of misinformation out there. So I think that's just something I wanted to sort of add on there, is that concern that even if parents are you know, brave enough to overcome maybe their shame or their worries about talking with their children about STDs and sex, again, maybe a lot of parents grew up in that era where that abstinence-only sex education was the norm. And I think maybe they don't have a lot of knowledge to really share with their children about preventing STDs and about preventing pregnancy. Are there good resources for a parent who maybe wants to, and I'll throw that out to the group, for a parent who maybe wants to address this subject with their children?
Certainly. There's, of course, the health department itself has, we can offer access to parents and community members for access to education materials, brochures about sexual health, prevention, testing, and treatment. If parents would like additional resources, those things are available locally. But they're also available, like you said, through the internet. The CDC's website is an excellent resource for up-to-date information that parents might be able to use. But there's resources available in the community. If parents are ready to have these conversations, we can make sure that they have access to the resources that they need. That includes real data, real information about testing, who is most at risk or highly affected by STDs in the community. And I think making sure that parents have access to those resources are vital, because that's where this conversation is going to start.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, just to add on to what James said, you know, we do have a presentation. If parents want to get a copy of it, we'd be more than glad to download it. I mean, it's very simple, very educational, and we'd be more than glad to share that information with any parent.
Right. Let me tell you another place they can get that, too, and this is actually in state statute. So we have to provide a minimum of a 2-week notice opt-out letter. This is in the school system, okay? So an opt-out means that they're going to go through the instruction in the curriculum unless a parent tells us different. Just to show you how things have changed, okay, we only have one in every 800 kids opt out of it. Hardly anybody opts out of it anymore. And I think it goes back to some of the stuff Jane was talking about. It's the influence of the media, and I think parents have seen that. HIV is not the political clickbait, if you will, that it used to be, okay? And that's kind of unfortunate because it's still out there and it still has all kind of issues. But part of that state statute with a minimum of 2-week opt-in a kid out is that the parents have a right to come preview the material. We're very transparent. Come see the stuff that we're going to put your child through, the education. And they have samples. Both these companies that we use have online. Parents can go online and see it as well. One last thing I don't want to mention is I didn't mention about how the awareness can make a difference. Let me tell you how. The program that James and Dale through the health department are doing, as he mentioned, we saw a huge uptake of kids getting tested once they do their signs and symptoms presentation. So that little 30 minutes of going into all those classrooms, and we do it through social studies classes, it actually has probably saved lives, believe it or not. So it's one of our biggest programs. We call that STD Blitz, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And just to add on, I think last year we was able to educate over 1,000 students And this year, it probably is going to double.
Very good. We have an email that's come in here from a listener, Michelle. She says she appreciates the attention to this topic very much. And then she says, women often bear the brunt of STD testing, treatment, and the repercussions of STDs. She wants to know, how can we bring awareness to the responsibility of sexual partners, no matter their gender, to get tested and be proactive with sexual health? Claudia.
So one of the things, We have discovered that a lot of the women that have STDs had no idea they were exposed to an STD. And so one of the things that we're recommending is couples testing. So if you're going to have sexual relations with somebody who you've never had sex with before, even if hopefully you're in a monogamous relationship with, that you go together to get tested. You get tested and you get your results together. And that there's an agreement that you're going to know each other's status before you do anything. And we can help with that. I'm not sure how it works with private providers, but we can certainly do that at the health department.
Mm-hmm. And also just to kind of piggyback off what Claudia is saying is for a long time, a lot of males wouldn't test. And it was because of the testing with the Q-tip because it was very invasive. But now, you know, through technology, we do the urine-based test now. And, you know, I'm kind of glad of the urine-based test now because a lady can come in for a pregnancy test and we can pick up a chlamydia. Males can come in now and they can urinate in a cup and we can actually pick up an STD. So we are seeing more males test than 10 years ago. So thank God for the new technology.
All right, and we'll get back to our discussion on STD prevention and education coming up right after this break. Welcome back to Perspectives. Today we're talking about the prevention and education surrounding STDs or sexually transmitted diseases. Before the break, we were talking about kind of the heavy role or the heavy weight that women have when it comes to STD prevention and really many things related, I think, to sexual encounters, right? So it is often a woman's job to be concerned about pregnancy prevention. It's often a woman's job to, you know, to ask her partner about whether that partner has been tested for STDs. And you were just mentioning right before or during the break, Jane, that you've heard from some of the women that your organization has interviewed that can be a really difficult thing to do.
Yes, the women that we spoke with, and again, these are college-age women at FSU and FAMU and TCC, and they felt a fear of rejection if they were to raise the issue or if they were to assert their rights in a relationship where they really liked a young man were afraid that he might turn them away. And I've actually worked with some young women who become infected, and unbeknownst to them, their partner had been with another partner, and then the young woman, college-age woman, becomes infected. And I watched her self-esteem go plummet as a result of that. And then going forward, she felt that she was undesirable because she had been infected. And so I saw her make choices about who she dated based on the fact that she felt dirty. And it's really a sad, sad thing for a girl or young woman to bear the brunt of that. She's no more sexually active than her male partner, but she is, like Claudia said, she's sharing, bearing that burden on her own. And again, until we help to normalize the conversation around this so that everyone feels comfortable and we remove the shame from the conversation and just talk about reality and facts and long-term consequences, because and I'm not the epidemiologist at the table, but I do know that, you know, a sexually transmitted disease can impact you for the rest of your life and your ability to have children. So it really is a critical conversation that we can't afford not to have with our youth. And if parents can't do it, then we need to figure out how else to have it, either through the schools, by empowering the schools to do more education, or to create some community conversations so that where we are on this issue in terms of ourselves face-to-face matches with where our youth are with what they're receiving from social media. Because I think you've got conflicting trajectories where you've got social media is barraging them with temptation and normalizing sex, but socially, we have not gotten there in terms of arming our kids with what they need to protect themselves. So it's it's like a disconnect we've got to resolve.
Well, and part of, to me, it seems like maybe part of that extra weight that women carry when it comes to STD prevention is the different impact that women face when it comes to contracting an STD. On their body, they have a much larger impact. STDs impact them more seriously, as you mentioned. It could lead to fertility, having trouble, having a baby, or having trouble if they're pregnant, with having that baby too early, and also psychologically, Claudia, you mentioned the psychological impact that having an STD might have, or that discussing STDs might have, and sort of the it leads back to the role that maybe women are expected to play in our society. And so if, you are expected to be this, pure woman, and now you have to have a discussion about something like an STD with this guy you want to date, I think that makes women, not feel empowered and not sure about how to move forward. Alan, I'm wondering if there's some way through education that we can talk with men more, young men more, about why they should care about the impacts that these diseases are having on the women that they're dating, and both emotionally and physically.
Yeah, well, one thing I have to do is dispel the myths that are out there, okay? So there's a survey. It's called the Florida Youth Risk Behavior Survey. It goes out about every other year, and it gives us the data on substance abuse and sexual activity and those kind of things. And believe it or not, most kids aren't having sex. And when they hear that, they don't believe me. They said, oh, everybody's doing it. No, fewer than 50% of high school seniors have had sexual intercourse. But you can't believe that by watching the pressures that are on. I mean, it's a David and Goliath issue right now, because sex is, it's been part of our media, or just part of this hypersexual atmosphere, just for years and years and years, and they're inundated with it, and especially with the avenue of social media. So, our two biggest addictions are pornography and gambling, because of the readily available access that they can get to. So so the education piece, we need to really hyper-educate on it. And to do that, we're going to need help from the community. I mean, everybody out there, needs to hear the message and get involved, because it's the school system. There's just not. Well, the kids are only in school 6 hours and 20 minutes, and the pressure's on the standardized test right now. So we just don't. I'm integrating it through science, but remember, this is a behavioral activity. So nice cognitive knowledge is not enough. Just so we show them stuff that we're trying to change in behavior too. Mm-hmm. And the example I use is, think about reading and writing and math. Okay, we do that 13 years straight, and we still struggle with it. Try doing this 1 week in the month of May. That's when we do our education. So it's going to have to be a community collaborative effort, mm-hmm, to really make a difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if I could just add on to what Mr. Cox is saying, when he's talking about education in the community, it takes all of us to come in and address, this issue. And you said a couple of things that really kind of raised my antenna. We was talking about childbearing, and also talked about females having babies. And, we definitely need to get this message out to pregnant females, how important it is for the provider, the female, to make sure that they are tested, because what I'm seeing now, I'm seeing an increase of pregnant females with STDs. And, that initial first visit, they should be tested. They should be tested 28 to 32 weeks, and they should definitely be tested at delivery. So, these are some of the issues that I want to bring about, just to collaborate with what Al and everybody talking about. It takes the whole community to come together, and that's from home, the parents, to the provider itself. So, I just wanted to make that clear about the pregnant females being tested. And Claudia, you probably want to piggyback off that also.
Well, that's absolutely one of our goals of our campaign, is to make sure that all the healthcare providers and pregnant women know that they need to be tested, exactly, and that they need to be testing. But also, with syphilis, there is a much higher risk of getting HIV if you're exposed to it. So we're seeing a lot of co-infection, people infected with both. And because there are there are open sores with syphilis that are painless, and people don't know they have them. A lot of times they don't see them, and that's when people are most infectious, but they can also get HIV and other STDs as well. And with HIV, it's not curable with an antibiotic. You have to be on an antiretroviral for the rest of your life. So it's something that we really want to try to avoid. So I think it's important that, I mean, this is really risky behavior. It's a really risky situation.
Mm-hmm. Claudia, I'm wondering, how do you as a health educator walk the line of, letting people know that they maybe are participating in risky behavior and that they should be doing something to protect themselves or protect their unborn child if they're pregnant, and balancing that with feeding into this fear that we've all been talking about. You know, we've been saying, hey, there's a lot of shame surrounding STDs and sex. People, it's scary. People don't really want to talk about it too much. How do you walk that line? You know, you have to present these scary facts, I guess, about, the long-term negative health impacts that getting an STD could have without making people feel ashamed of their sexual choices or their sexual preferences.
So one-on-one with a provider, a sexual history is done, and it's done in a very non-judgmental way. And I don't mean to scare people out of their wits. I'm just really giving information about that we do see this co-infection and that, yes, we manage HIV and we manage it well, but it is a disease that you have to deal with for the rest of your life. So if you can avoid it, that'd be great. But a sexual history that's done in a non-judgmental way allows people to talk about what's going on with them. And nurses, nurse practitioners, doctors use motivational interviewing to just kind of pick up on, when people are indicating that they might be willing to change, and then just give them some strategies for doing that, help them along when they're ready to change a behavior.
An analogy that comes to my mind is, smoking. Smoking used to be so much more prevalent, and you saw it on television, you saw it everywhere, with an impunity, so that because it was never associated with disease. It was glamorous, and we have been able to convey the message that, no, it's not glamorous, and you don't see smoking on television as much. There's been some associated responsibility with smoking and promoting it, but I think with sexuality, there's none of that. Right now, sexuality is ubiquitous, and your kids are getting inundated with messages that they should be sexual, and there's no corresponding message that, but if you do engage, these are the risks. So I think that we really do need to manage the messaging. I don't know that we can control what's out there right now, but I think there's got to be some corresponding message that this, sex is not just glamorous. There's responsibilities associated with, like, pregnancy, like disease transmission, and you can't just do what they do on TV or do what you see on social media and think that you can walk away and have the same life you had before you engaged in that behavior. So I think that's something that's bigger than us in this room because it's media. But I think if we can be active in trying to ask for social media and for the general media to be more responsible about educating, I think we could make some inroads. That's an idealistic notion, but I'm going to be idealistic.
Yeah, so I think people who are listening to this conversation, I don't want them to think that these health experts here are saying, don't have sex, sex is bad. I think that is not the message that you guys are trying to send. You're trying to say that there are certain risks associated with this, grown-up behavior, and so there are grown-up steps you need to take to protect yourselves. And Claudia, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to just sort of, let people know. Like, if you wanted to have sex and you wanted to make sure that you were doing your best to prevent contracting an STD, what would someone do?
Well, first of all, they would get tested with their partner before they have sex, and then make sure that they, honestly, I would recommend to anybody that they kind of do a visual inspection of their partner, look for any sores or anything that is unusual that might indicate that there's a problem present, and then definitely use a condom every single time and use it correctly.
Mm-hmm. And so you were saying that if somebody wants to, maybe they are using one of those dating apps that you were talking about, and maybe they're going on a date tonight. Can they bring their date by the county health department and just get a rapid test?
Yes, they could get a rapid STD. They could get a rapid syphilis test and a rapid HIV test. But most important, you know, they actually have to see a clinician to get the gonorrhea and the chlamydia test. So, you know, I mean, they can come by and do the 20-minute test. If it is positive, we do follow it up with a blood test to confirm that that test is positive.
Just so. One caveat on the rapid testing technologies we have. For a rapid syphilis test, if somebody has had a past syphilis infection, even if it's been treated and the person doesn't have an active syphilis infection, if we're on a rapid test on that person, it'll still react because the antibodies that were present from the original infection created by the immune system are still going to be present. And when it comes to HIV rapid testing, the rapid testing technologies that we currently offer are what's known as third generation, where we can pick up infections that occurred within a 90-day or more time frame. They're antibody tests, so there has to be enough time frame for a level of antibody to build up in somebody's body before that test will react. So bringing somebody into the health department to get a rapid test is very a great idea. It's a great idea to with entering into a relationship, but take into mind that there's still that three-month window. So if somebody had a partner 2 days ago, 3 days ago, that testing device would not pick it up.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to kind of circle back to, we talked a little bit when we were talking about sort of the weight that women carry when it comes to STDs, and we talked about the impact that an STD could have on a woman's ability to get pregnant or to carry a healthy pregnancy. But I feel like we glossed over those details a little bit. I'm wondering if somebody might be able to kind of make sure we've got our all the right information on that subject.
Sure. So women who have an untreated STI infection are the ones who have the greatest risk, who bear the greatest burden of risk for long-term negative effects. An untreated infection can easily start, and make its way into the fallopian tubes without treatment. That could create scar tissue in the reproductive, in women's reproductive systems. And that scar tissue itself can lead to blockages, which can prevent pregnancy from happening or prevent a woman from carrying her child through a full term of pregnancy. So women do carry the biggest burden when it comes to the risk.
And the other thing is that women can get human papillomavirus that can cause cervical cancer, can lead to having to have a hysterectomy. And, I mean, I've seen this, people close to me. Where then they're not able to have children. So that's another, and there is a vaccine for that.
Right. So that's the HPV vaccine right. That a lot of high schoolers or college age students would be eligible for. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we can talk a little bit about, we've focused a lot about syphilis here. We've been really focusing on, that's what we're seeing growing not only here in Leon County, but across the country. But you've mentioned also that Leon County ranks pretty high in instances of a lot of different kinds of STDs. I know we've talked about gonorrhea. What other troubles are we seeing in Leon County?
In terms of other troubles, I would just like to clarify that the reason why our rates are so high, it has to do with our demographics. As Alan said, we're home to 70,000 students when college is in session, and we have this large community college. We also have an African-American population that's about 31% of our population, and there is a disproportionate share of STDs in the African-American population. If you combine all those factors, that's why we have such a high rate. Another trouble that's out on the horizon, we don't have it yet here, but they're seeing in the state a hepatitis A outbreak. And hepatitis A is a virus that can be prevented with a vaccine. We're seeing it more in people who use drugs and people who are homeless and people who are incarcerated. We in Leon County are trying to get out in front of that by giving vaccinations to those populations. So if anybody's interested, they can call the health department and we can certainly get them vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. And would you recommend that for any person, or who's an ideal candidate for that kind of vaccination?
Well, right now we're focused on those three populations, but really anybody.
All right. Well, thank you so much, all of you, for joining me here today on Perspectives. It's been a great conversation talking about the prevention and education surrounding sexually transmitted diseases. Perspectives is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. We have technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox with Lydell Rawls on the phones. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.